Praise be Jesus Christ, and welcome back to Carmelcast, episode 30. Carmelcast is a production of the Institute of Carmelite Studies Publications. For more information, you can visit our website at www.icspublications.org, where right now, if you're watching or listening to this before Easter 2021, we are currently in our Lent sale, and we are offering 30% off all of our St. Teresa of Avila titles, including the book that we are using for this study, The Way of Perfection Study Guide, study edition, I should say, and much more, including the letters of St. Teresa and books about her life and context and the time that she lived. And also, I'm really excited to announce that we have a new book launching this week being the third week of February. This book right here. It is called God, the Joy of My Life. It is about another St. Teresa of Jesus, St. Teresa of Jesus of the Andes, who was a Chilean saint who lived in the early 20th century, died at a very young age, and lived a very extraordinary life even within the short life that she had. And we're offering that as a part of our Lent sale as well, and that'll begin shipping this week as this episode airs. So I want to welcome back Brother John Barry of Jesus Crucified, and Dr. Mary Ruth Hackett. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
Yes.
So in today's episode, we are covering a book study of chapters 8 through 15 of The Way of Perfection. But before we get to that, I just wanted to bring in one short comment that we received from last week's episode that I thought was really great. Bridget on YouTube, she asks, or she doesn't ask a question, but she has a great comment reminding us of another great role model for moms in the interior life, which is our mom in chief, Our Lady. And I thought that was a really good reminder for us to always bring Our Lady into this. I mean, being Carmelites or Carmelite friendly in Dr. Mary Ruth's case, we want to always remember Our Lady and everything that she does for us and the example that she gives to us as the model contemplative and the mother of our Lord.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's a really, she's a great example of what it means to be married, to be a mother, and to be a contemplative, and to be so those things perfectly.
Yeah, and to suffer.
And yes. To suffer.
You know, that's, I mean, right. We'll just go there. There's a little bit of suffering in just general motherhood. So to know that she too suffered, you know, more so than most of us. So.
And reminded during Lent of the devotion to the seven sorrows of Our Lady, and as a good devotion for Lent, and of course the Sabbat Mater is another beautiful hymn, Lenten hymn, sort of meditating on those sorrows of Our Lady. But moving along to the subject of today's episode, we are going through chapters 8 through 15 of The Way of Perfection. And Brother John Mary, I think you're going to lead us through kind of a overview outline of what we covered in this week's reading.
Yes. Yeah. So I'll just remind everyone, if you didn't get around to the reading this week, that's all right. We're going to give a brief summary. That way everyone's on the same page as we start. So if you remember last week, we discussed how this book is primarily about prayer. That's what St. Teresa of Jesus wants to teach to her nuns, and that's what she wants to teach to us. And so last week we were kind of setting the stage for prayer, because Teresa talks about these three Teresian virtues that are the necessary foundation for prayer. And last week we talked about love of neighbor, and this week in chapters 8 through 15, she talks about detachment and humility. And we'll notice that all of these are really closely connected. The humility, detachment, and love of neighbor, you really cannot be separated. But these two especially go hand in hand that we're talking about this week, detachment and humility. So much so that in chapter 10, paragraph 2, she calls them inseparable sisters. So to begin in chapter 8, she talks about detachment from all creatures. And she's very insistent that this detachment is total, that it includes everything. Here she begins to discuss detachment from relatives as well, and we'll talk a little bit later about what exactly that means. She continues in chapter 9, discussing detachment from relatives, saying about the great danger that can come from dealing too much with relatives in the wrong way. But she also clarifies what she means by relatives in chapter 9, saying that she isn't referring to parents or brothers or sisters. And the remedy that she provides to us for detachment from relatives is really to cling to Jesus. That's the answer that she provides. Then she moves in chapter 10 to discussing detachment from ourselves. And this is where she really starts to bring in humility, saying that detachment from ourselves is closely linked to humility. She says that we shouldn't feel secure if we have detached ourselves from all the exterior things of the world, and yet we haven't detached ourselves from what's most important, from ourselves. She said it's like locking the doors with a thief inside of the castle or inside of the house. These virtues hide themselves from those who have them, both detachment and humility. Often the person's not aware that they have these virtues, but she tells us that these virtues are such that they'll be seen and be clearly seen by others. Also concerning detachment from ourselves, she says a few words about how we shouldn't be overly concerned about our health. And this is something that she continues in chapter 11, where she talks about detachment from body. She says that we shouldn't complain about our bodily illnesses. If a sickness is serious enough, then it'll make itself known. This doesn't mean, though, that she wants us to not take care of ourselves. So she says when it is serious that we shouldn't ignore it, but that we should really seek a remedy, but that we shouldn't fear sickness and death, but just be completely abandoned to God. Then Teresa, in chapter 12, transitions to discussing detachment from honor. So just as there was exterior mortification in detachment from the body, she also wants to talk about interior mortification. And this also she considers to be absolute. She says that we should strive to go against our wills in everything. And the point of this detachment is not to live miserable, sad lives, but rather to be completely free, to be free to give ourselves to God. So just as a martyr offers his life quickly by dying for Jesus, she says that we're supposed to live as martyrs, slowly giving ourselves over and dying to ourselves for Jesus. Also in this chapter, she's talking about concern, particularly from detachment from honor, privileges of rank, and wealth. And she says that where these are present, there can be no growth in prayer. So to counteract these temptations, she suggests that we volunteer for lowly tasks or things like that to kind of help us in humility. Next, chapter 13, she discusses detachment from esteem of others. And this includes the desire to be right or of saying that you were wronged by another. She says that we don't deserve good treatment. Rather, we should rejoice in sharing in the dishonor of Jesus, just as we share in his honor. And that in this, we should imitate the humility of the Blessed Virgin Mary. And she warns that any nun who has a habit of complaining ought to leave, because they should really only be concerned with pleasing God. And then chapter 14, St. Teresa goes on a little bit of a digression, and because she's talking about, you know, this the nun who has a habit of complaining, she goes on this digression just about discernment in general, saying that it should be carefully discerned whether someone should join the monastery or not. They should join for the right reasons, not only looking for some secure future. And then finally, chapter 15, she concludes the discussion of humility. She begins by acknowledging that she has digressed in the previous chapter, and then she in that she admits that she's acknowledges that she's doing the very thing that then she's going to instruct us not to do, that she's excusing herself, making excuses for why she got off track. And so she says that we ought to not make excuses or justifications, rather to accept even when we're falsely accused. She says that that's a great sign of perfection. But she does clarify this is not to an extreme. At times, it's lawful to give an excuse, and it would even be wrong not to do so. For example, when not giving an excuse would cause anger or scandal. And so the truly humble person will desire to be held in little esteem, to be falsely accused, and to be persecuted, imitating Jesus Christ, who was silent in the midst of his persecution. She says that we're never entirely without fault, and that true failings are always much worse than the untrue ones that we're accused of. So when we do not excuse ourselves, God will send someone to defend us. And when he doesn't, our defense won't even be necessary. But ultimately, she says, our joy is not to be found in being defended, but in the freedom of being detached from what others say about us. So that's kind of a summary of those chapters discussing detachment and humility.
Well, lots of interesting points that we can dive into a little bit deeper. Since St. Teresa begins in chapter 8 with the discussion of detachment, that's probably the place where we should begin. And she says that detachment, the detachment that we ought to have, if we are to do it with perfection, includes everything. So to be detached from everything, that seems like a tall order. But over the course of the chapters that succeed this note in chapter 8, she qualifies it a little bit in terms of what exactly is applicable in our state in life. And a lot of that has to do with having a good examining one's conscience well.
Yeah, I think we discussed a good bit last week kind of about detachment as well, of what is it that Teresa means by this. She doesn't mean this sort of stoic, unpassionate going around life in that way. Rather, she's really talking about an attachment that's an unhealthy attachment to things. And I just think that's a very important clarification to make when we're talking about detachment, because there's a lot of different words you can use for detachment. And I think detachment really can sound very negative to some people if it's not properly understood in its right context.
Yeah, I know in psychology we talk about secure attachments and insecure attachments. And so for a lot of people probably reading this, when they look at it, they're like, wait a minute, what do you mean I'm not supposed to be attached to my kids, or they're not supposed to be attached to me, or we're not supposed to be attached to our parents? But really, when it comes down to it, it's sort of talking about this notion of excessive love and where your heart is, and whether or not that person or that relationship is pulling you away from your relationship with the Lord. I think those are some good keys to kind of keep in mind when you're evaluating those relationships. And then, you know, do those relationships steal your peace? And some of them will, and they're still healthy and valid and important things to have. So just because a relationship is difficult, that doesn't mean that that's not a relationship that you should still invest in. I know for a lot of us, I'm one of those sandwich generations right now. So I'm helping with my parents a little bit, with my in-laws. My husband and I are helping a lot with them. And that's a tough time. But it doesn't mean that I'm supposed to just abandon them, you know, at this point in their life. We still need to have that. But we also need to bring God into that relationship. And we need to bring God into those interactions so that we have the strength of will to still do that. And that's going to come from our relationship with God. But nothing's going to take priority over that relationship with God.
Yeah, and it seems like in those difficult relationships, detachments really needed all the more to continue loving in the midst of the difficulty, and also to realize, I think, what detachment looks like a lot in our relationships is not trying to control the other person, to allow the other to be other. And I think that's extremely hard, and especially if you're taking care of parents, perhaps, or taking care of your kids, it becomes really difficult to give them the proper space to be who they are, realizing that you can't control every aspect.
Yeah, and I think sometimes the hard part of that is when we get our self-worth from what other people are doing. So we feel like, oh, if I just work a little harder as a parent, my kid's going to do better in school. Or if I just can communicate more effectively with my mom, she'll make a better choice in this decision. But we there are situations where nothing that we can do is going to influence that person's behavior. They're going to do what they're going to do. And that doesn't mean that we shouldn't have our self-worth or our sense of, did I succeed or not succeed in this interaction based off of what someone else is doing?
I think we can bring in a good distinction here as well that Teresa herself brings in chapter 9, paragraph 3, in the difference between natural and supernatural. In the order of creation. And we have these natural attractions. And I think sometimes it's a matter of going beyond our natural attraction and bringing those attachments to God and supernaturalizing them. And in that supernaturalizing, we kind of restore the proper order of relationships, detachments and God. And also it allows God to work through those relationships in a supernatural way through the Holy Spirit and through grace. And also just to say that, that Teresa was very clear on the role of parents, and the parents love their children. All parents love their children in a natural way. Christian parents are called to love their children in a supernatural way, which is that self-emptying, self-gift of love. And I think Teresa recognizes that in when she specifically talks about parents. And if she wasn't writing specifically to celibate nuns, she probably would have said the same thing about children as well, relationships with children. But it's outside of the context, of course, of what she's writing.
Yeah, I think one way to think of that as a parent is to love without expectation. And so, you know, I love my kids without expectation that they're going to do anything. There are times I was teasing one of my teenagers that my youngest one like wanted more attention from me, and I said, "Look, I've got to give everything to, you know, this child, my third born tonight, because tomorrow she might not love me at all." You know, and we kind of giggled about it. But with teens, I mean, they're like up and down. Sometimes they love you. Sometimes, like, they can't look at you without like laser eyes trying to bore a hole into you. So, like, you got to just love them. You still got to love them, even if they're not going to love you back. You just love, because that's why you were created, right? We're created to love.
Yeah, and also to clarify, I think the context in which Teresa is writing this and speaking, because I think we can give the false impression also that well, okay, we should love our parents and love our kids, but we and our brothers and sisters, but that we should like shun our cousins or our grandparents or something like that. But really, what Teresa's speaking about is kind of coming from her experience as a nun in the Incarnation and the culture of her time, where it was very common for the nuns to receive all these visitors, their cousins, their extended relatives, to come visit them all the time, draw them away from their what they should be doing in the monastery, giving them all this gossip and just being concerned about what's happening in the family, what drama is happening in the community, being concerned about the honor of the family and how, you know, these are my relatives and they're considered to be, you know, very high in ranking, and so that brings me some honor as well. And so Teresa saw this, and I think really she's reacting to it, saying, well, we talked about it last week, we should be concerned primarily with our like close sphere of influence, and at times that might include our cousins or our grandparents or other relatives, but we shouldn't be so scattered and just worried about so much that we lose focus of what God is calling us to in the moment.
I think the parallel comes for us in this age of social media, where we have probably more contact with our extended family and friends than we had in the past. So you have Aunt Petunia posting on various political matters on Facebook, and then we can get sucked into, whether we agree or disagree with Aunt Petunia, we can get sucked into to this realm that exists in our world today. And I think this would be the sort of thing that St. Teresa is advising us to stay away from. Excessive worry about politics, excessive worry about fitness or health or money, and to just, you know, in a way that will come up again and again in with St. Teresa, of minding your own business with respect to your relationship with God and with the people who are directly around with you and who you're called to be charitable with.
And I think it's important to clarify. I don't think if we're applying it to the situation, I think some people have gone to the extreme then, and they've said, I'm just not going to talk to this person anymore at all. Like, not in real life, not on social media. I'm going to mute them. They're out of my life. I disagree with them. I think they steal my peace, and I just can't be friends with them anymore. And I think that there's a real balance that you have to achieve, with still maintaining relationships with people and still maintaining interactions with people and being able to say hi and being able to, you know, have dinner with your Aunt Petunia still, and to just avoid those circumstances or those situations if there is just really a lot, if you find that they do steal that peace from you or those circumstances really do get you upset. I think it's important to say this doesn't mean that we should never talk to Aunt Petunia, because I feel like that is sort of the way that a lot of people have gone, is they've just said, you're out of my life, then I'm just cutting you out. And a lot of friendships and a lot of relationships have, and I know I'm just in my own life, they've really been strained because of that.
Yeah, Teresa says in chapter 9, paragraph 1, that she says, I don't know what consolation they give us if in talking with them we leave out what pertains to God and deal only what pertains to our comfort and rest. And so that's really her point there, is like we should keep Christ in the middle of these relationships. Granted, that doesn't mean we're always talking about Christ to these people, because maybe Aunt Petunia is an atheist, and you talking about directly about Christ would only kind of cause a barrier between you. But the purpose for that conversation and that relationship should always be to, through, even if it's through natural means, to like bring her closer to Christ or closer to the truth.
And I apologize to anyone watching or listening to this whose name is Petunia.
We love you, yes. Petunia. We
yes.
do.
So kind of related to the issue of family and family relations, at least in Teresa's time, was the issue of honor, because honor was very much tied in with issues of what she calls blood purity, or what they called at the time blood purity. And the fact that during this time in Spain, you have a lot of former Moors and former Jews who by law were required to renounce their faith and become Christian. And along with this becomes sort of the social contextual issue of those who were Christian all along. And this creates this social atmosphere of excessive worry about honor, and those who were perceived to have this honor then were afforded special privileges or to be considered first among others. And of course, this is not a Christian. I mean, at the time, these were Christians who believed this, but it is not a biblical or a Catholic moral. It's not compatible with those things. And it's not to say that people at the time didn't realize that, but maybe becoming attached to honor and familial sort of relationships created this danger that Teresa wants to detach from and for her nuns to detach from. And so we can find analogs, I think, pretty easily in today's day and age, in the recent past as well. And it's interesting. It's an interesting context, but what do you guys make of her chapter on speaking about honor with respect to detachment, but also it brings in the next virtue of humility?
Yeah, I couldn't read this without thinking about all the mommy martyrs walking around because right here. I said earlier that we should, you know, be loving without expectation, but I know that one of the biggest complaints of parenthood is that we're not appreciated. You've got, you know, you do the same thing every single day, day after day, and you pick up the same shoes that 2 minutes later are back on the floor, or you give them something to put away and they put it on the counter instead of taking it to their room. And it's just, it's like, does anybody even understand what I'm going through? Does anybody have any clue how hard this is? Because it's just sort of an invisible job that goes on in the background. And that's just the physical stuff. And then you've got the emotional stuff and the emotional worry and guilt and fear and confusion and all that. So I don't know what to do. And so I think it's really easy to fall into that really self-pity almost, because no one appreciates anything that we do. But we shouldn't be loving our children and doing what we do and living this vocation because we expect to be appreciated for doing it. We should be doing it to serve God, and our reward will come later. And that was just one of those lines that she had in there, I think probably repeatedly. And yeah, we do need to teach our children to be aware and appreciative as they, like, we cultivate this attitude of gratitude, but that doesn't mean that we should be like walking around sobbing that no one notices all the work that we do, or going out with our friends at night and getting drunk and just talking about how horrible, you know, the girls' night out, mom night out, whatever, that, oh, we, you know, you just have to blow off all this steam. very few people in life are ever feel like they're fully appreciated or appropriately appreciated, no matter what their vocation in life is. And I don't know why there's this misnomer that we're going to be appreciated for everything that we do, because there's no way for anybody to, to live in our own skin. So it's really almost like this unrealistic expectation for any of us to think that we'll be appreciated for everything that we're doing or to the level of what we're doing. So that just shouldn't even be a motivation for why we're doing what we're doing. But it is. There's just this internal drive sometimes.
Yeah, and you can see, like, in Teresa, especially in the first half of The Way of Perfection, she seems almost obsessed with this idea of honor. You can see how, like, how big it was in her time, and I think that your example is very good of just like this desire to feel appreciated. Because, like Pier Giorgio said, it's great to try to think of, like, well, what's the analog of this in our own, the parallel in our own time, something that's kind of a social, I don't know, like a huge black stain, basically, on our practice of Christianity. And I really think one thing maybe would be like image. We seem very, we're not concerned about like blood purity and things like that, but I think we do live in this culture that's very obsessed with an image. We want to have this good image. We care, we craft an image of ourselves on social media or even in real life where we want to be perceived in a certain way, and we try to control that. So that people think a certain way of us. And I kind of see that as sort of the response in our own time. And what Teresa's answer was really to honor was like our only concern should be to be honored by Jesus Christ, to be honored by God. That's the honor we should be concerned with. And like you said, Dr. Mary Ruth, like we're never going to feel like we're completely appreciated in this life. And unless we learn to realize that all of our appreciation, all of our honor must come from God.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is such an important, I think, thing that we deal with on a daily basis. You mentioned social media and sort of crafting an image, but also issues of striving after worldly achievements. We live in sort of like this trophy culture too. And a lot of the way that people are motivated today are through recognition. And so if I'm not recognized in doing a good thing, then it's almost like I didn't do it at all, which is absurd.
Yeah, that's
So
good.
this is an this sort of, like I mentioned, this discussion of honor that Saint Teresa makes is all within the context of detachment. And so we can think of sort of this fleeing from considerations of honor as sort of a detachment from oneself and sort of a self-detachment. And so we talk about, well, we don't talk about it, but Saint Teresa talks about interior or exterior and interior mortifications in this section as well. And there's, I think, some distinctions that we want to make with regard to interior mortification as a way of humility and detachment.
Yeah, I think one way to think about interior mortification in the lay world, is that the proper term, is just this idea of not giving into these little desires and sort of letting them control everything, and not constantly seeking our own satisfaction or comfort. And it's really countercultural, but it's really easily done in normal life, in normal family life, when you're aware of it, as a goal. So in a healthy marriage, I'm supposed to put my spouse first, and he's supposed to put me first. I'm not supposed to put my own cares before my cares for him. I'm supposed to put my children's cares, and health and well-being before my own. And sometimes back to that expectation, that can lead to dissatisfaction because then we feel unappreciated, or maybe there's imbalance in it. But there's always going to be some sort of imbalance in every relationship. And there are times when I need to give more, to my marriage than maybe my husband's able to give me, and vice versa. And there are times when my kids are going to need more from me, one child versus the other. And I want them to recognize that. That doesn't mean that this child is my favorite. It means that he's having a rough time, and I need to be giving a little more of myself to him. And so when I think it can be helpful to step back a little bit and say, am I loving this person? Am I doing this? You know, when you get kind of down and feel kind of empty, am I doing this out for any reason other than because I love them and I want the best for them? That can be very helpful. And then, am I doing this out of love of God? And am I serving this person? Am I waking up in the middle of the night to nurse this baby out of love of God? Am I putting this child's needs before my own sleep needs out of love of God? Or am I doing it for someone else, or am I doing it for myself? Because then I'm not going to be expecting gratitude or appreciation out of that. This notion of self-care is like this buzzword, and a lot of those in the field of psychology love self-care and really push people for self-care, but I really want people to rethink what self-care looks like, because self-care is not a weekly manicure or eating ice cream after bed or girls' night out or even a daily exercise routine. In some ways, that's indulgence. And St. Teresa talks about the devil suggesting that we indulge ourselves. And indulgence isn't self-care. Like what we do during Lent, I love Lent. Lent's my favorite time of year. What we do during Lent is self-care. And this idea of secular self-care can lead us to an overemphasis on this physical self, or even an obsession with the self, rather than growing in holiness and healthy relationships with God and then with others. So, I don't know. I hate the word self-care. It's just, ugh, it just like grinds me the wrong way. So.
No, I think also I think Father Kieran has a good note in the back. I think it's in the back of probably, I think it's chapter 13 in the study edition. He talks about kind of, well, Teresa uses the word mortification and detachment. Like we have other words because those words maybe have negative connotations now, but the reality of what Teresa is speaking of is well, freedom really. By that's what she means by those things, and. I mean, it seems like very absolute, and I think that can be scary because she says, you know, we're supposed to not give in our wills and appetites, even in the little things. And which reminds me actually of a great quote by St. John of the Cross in the first book of the Ascent to Mount Carmel, where he talks about it makes no difference whether a bird is tied by a thin thread or by a cord, because even if it's tied by a thin thread, the bird will still be bound just as securely. So this idea of like even these little things that, and that's what Teresa realizes that aren't necessarily sinful, these little indulgences perhaps can be the beginnings of turning in on ourselves rather than focusing on loving others. And she addresses that in chapter 12, paragraph 3. She says, "But how extremely rigorous it seems to say that we shouldn't please ourselves in anything when we do not also mention the pleasure and delight this going against our will carries in its wake, and what is gained by it even in this life." So it's not this just like depressing sort of no happiness, I'm going to mortify myself, but it's really it's choosing these things out of freedom, and that's what's going to make us the most joyful in life by giving ourselves completely.
And I think when you practice that, we'll say freedom or interior mortification in the little things, that's what gives us almost like the power, or the not the
Yes.
power, but the strength to make those decisions
Right.
in the big things as well. So it's those
Yes.
little teeny choices that we make every day that help formulate that integrity that we have to then say, you know, I can make this bigger choice. I can make this bigger sacrifice. I can do this, because
Yes.
you've been practicing little by little for a longer period of time.
Exactly. Pier Giorgio and I talked in an early episode of Carmelcast on asceticism about that exact thing, that sometimes saying no to the extra cookie or choosing to hold my tongue and not say something. I mean, those are the little ways that it's like lifting little spiritual weights that strengthen our will in order that then we can choose to love in the bigger choices as well.
Yeah, and I think it's really, really helpful for parents to recognize that you are making those little choices, and non-parents too, but I can just speak from that place of parenthood. You make those little choices and those little sacrifices every day. Like if you're driving carpool, you're choosing not to have that glass of wine because you're going to be driving a bunch of kids around. If you say no to dessert in the evening because you don't want your kids to have it, you're also saying no to yourself. And those are beautiful little choices. And if I think sometimes if we can change our just be aware that we are making those choices, that can really help us to grow in the interior life as well. Because a lot of people are already doing this. They're just not even thinking about it as, wow, yeah, I could be growing right now spiritually.
And Teresa talks about in the context of chapters 10 through 13 or so, I don't know if she's not apologizing necessarily, but she's explaining why in her Carmelite monastery that, the nuns aren't doing with an hour and a half of sleep every night or eating every third day, which are some examples that the Father Kieran mentions in the study guides for these chapters, but rather mortification as just as we've been saying, those little opportunities to say, I'm going to do this instead of that, because this is what's ultimately going to lead me to holiness and towards salvation. One example she gives that I really r relate to and can identify with, because there's a bell in our monastery that rings a couple times a day calling us to prayer. And there can be instances in our life where we didn't sleep well the night before, or we have a headache. And Teresa talks about this. We say we stay away from prayer one day because our head ached, another because it was just now aching, and three more days so that it won't ache again in the future. So there's this, I mean, I can, guilty, right? These things, opportunities come into our head all the time. It's like, I can't do that because, I want to get a good night's sleep tonight. And by that, you mean sleep in for till 10 a.m. or whatever. And these are all just little opportunities to say, okay, no, this is what's really important right now, even though I have this minor inconvenience that I could easily indulge.
I love those lines like that in the book that she writes, where she gives those examples. It just makes me laugh. I'm like, this is why I love you so much. She's just
Yes.
great. Her writing is so relatable.
Yeah, and also, I mean, I think it's been interesting for me reading The Way of Perfection this time, because I've been trying to think more about like how does this apply to life outside of the monastery, and in this section, again, because she has very high ideals, she's calling us to like this perfect detachment. But in this section on in chapter 12, paragraph 5, she says the perfect soul can be detached and humble anywhere. It's just so clear that it's yeah this is not just applying to her nuns in the convent, but it's really applying to all of us. And in many ways, those in the world, those with kids and families, have more opportunities really to deny their wills throughout the day in those little ways, in the small things that they do. And like Saint Therese says, to do those things with great love. That's really tr that's why Saint Therese's mortification was taking after Teresa of Avila, and that it's an absolute asceticism. We're called to give our wills over completely to God in the small things.
To bring back the issue of honor and also to sort of transition us into the next topic, she says in chapter 11, paragraph 3, learn how to suffer a little for love of God without having everyone know about it. And so that's another reminder for us, not to seek honor in all the little mortifications that we do, because they're not about honoring ourselves, they're about honoring God. And related to that, I think, is this issue of excuse making. I love that you brought that up in your overview, Brother John Mary, because it kind of you can kind of see it as a sort of an afterthought. Here's this little paragraph that she gives us on how she has been procrastinating, perhaps not in her duties, but in continuing this work of writing for her nuns. I think this is at the beginning of chapter 15. And so all these mortifications, opportunities for mortifications, are then also opportunities to not make excuses. And I wonder if what you guys were thinking about that.
Well, I
Yeah.
make excuses for things all the time, so I don't know if I'm the best one to speak.
No, that's you're an expert then.
Yes. That's what Teresa says too, though. And then she teaches us, so.
Right. I'm still learning from her how to do this. No, usually I have to, I'll start on the road of making excuses, and then as I'm doing it, I'm sounding how ridiculous it is, so then I have to backpedal. Excuse myself for making the excuses.
Yeah. No, I appreciate how nuanced Teresa is in this because it can sound very absolute, but then when you actually see what she's saying, it's not like that we should never, explain ourselves. And she even says that there's times when we really ought to explain ourselves, or times when we have to, where it would be sinful not to explain ourselves. But I think if we make a conscious, like an examination of our conscience throughout the day, we're going to find all these times where we're excusing ourselves when we unneeded, where often I think we're trying to just kind of like distance ourselves from blame or from being misunderstood or like in little ways. And yeah, I think there's just so many opportunities where we do that throughout our day, when we could remain silent.
Yeah, I mean, so frequently the excuses that we make end up being justifications for our behavior. And I think that that's really the danger is when I tell my kids all the time, just because you're, angry or tired, that doesn't give you the excuse to be rude or to be mean or to be unkind. Like, you don't, yeah, sure, I know that you are hungry, but you still have to treat me with respect. Like, you still have to be nice to people around you. And so I think that, we will, I and this is again, I told you I make excuses for myself, but there are times when I'm like, I'm just so tired. But that I still need to be responding with love to people. It's a little harder then, but you still got to do it.
I think it's ironic too when I don't know if you I'm sure you both encountered this, everyone listening too, but when we sort of preface a complaint with like this false humility, like I don't want to complain, but or my favorite one is sorry, not sorry.
Yes.
And so just sort of this false humility of like, I know this is I know I shouldn't complain, but I'm going to anyway. And that's a perfect opportunity where this would be kind of funny to do, but to say, not to complain, and I guess I won't, so I'll just go bye. That kind of it would be so unusual because we're so accustomed to complaining, I think.
And Teresa talks about how, I mean, she's pretty strong in this, that she says that, if there's the nun who complains, like they shouldn't enter the monastery, basically. There's a great quote in chapter 13, paragraph 7, where she says, "This house is a heaven if one can be had on this earth. Here we have a very happy life if one is pleased only with pleasing God and pays no attention to her own satisfaction. If a nun desires something in addition to pleasing God, all will be lost because that something cannot be had." And I think that's something, I mean, she's talking about a religious community, but I think perhaps even more so in a family, how complaining can like really destroy relationships, re destroy the family bond, and really bring everything down.
Yeah, for sure. And it's funny, we've seen it. We've talked before, guys, that we're a big soccer family, and we've seen it on our kids' teams before. When you'd have just one player who's just a cancer for the team because all they do is complain. They complain at practice. They get on each other's cases that, on when they're out in the field playing the game, and it just destroys the team itself. And similarly, in a family, if you've got someone who's just, I would just say, like running through a rough patch, maybe, where they're just constantly complaining about things. It's nice when you can have it not have to come from the parents to tell them that they're out of line, because frequently we have found in our family that works a lot better when their siblings can say, "What are you complaining about? This is, whatever. This is amazing, or this is great, or think of it like one of our kids was complaining that we never take him camping. And one of them was like, "What are you talking about? They took us to Europe 2 years ago. Like, are you crazy?" And so it's really nice when you can have the peers, whether it's the kids or the coworkers or the teammates, correcting that behavior rather than having it come top down. But when we can see it in others, then maybe that can help us be more aware of it in ourselves too. When we start complaining, we have that first thought that I cannot believe they're asking me to whatever. Again, we just take a deep breath. I'm so glad I have the opportunity to serve you, Lord, right now. 'Cause it's easy to get into that complaining role yourself and not even realize it.
Yeah, it reminds me, my mom had growing up on, actually maybe she still has it on her refrigerator, the Bible verse from Philippians 2, do everything without complaining or arguing, so that you may become blameless children of God. I just remember seeing that so often, and obviously there was a reason why she put it
I
there.
might need to get that in a printable to hang somewhere in my house too. I like that.
Yes.
Matching family t-shirts, that'd be great.
Oh yeah. Perfect for road trips.
So these are maybe this is a maybe that was maybe a facetious sort of practical tip, but I know that we wanted to kind of end the episode talking about more practical things that we can do to exercise or practice humility and detachment in our lives, and wondering what you guys what are some things that you think would be helpful for people.
Man, I got a whole list. I got a whole list of things. I love the practical stuff is just what I love so much. I can't help but think, okay, how can this apply? How can this apply? So I am going to go through my list and you guys interrupt me if you want me to stop. First, lower your expectations for perfection for family members, for yourselves, and just seek ways to grow in holiness rather than being disappointed or rescuing. Because I think that those are two ways that we respond when people don't meet our expectations. Because suffering is sometimes necessary. And we talked about that a little bit. That was kind of from the last chapter that when you love someone with this spiritual love, then you can recognize that sometimes their sufferings or their imperfections are just a part of their path and a part of their growth. And when we go around and we criticize or we rescue them, then they don't have that opportunity to like really continue to grow. So strive for that like more pure love for others, and recognize that everybody's on their own journey, right? So we're equipped differently for that journey based off of what that journey is going to look like. And so we shouldn't be taking responsibility for the choices that other people make, but rather like supporting them and guiding them, helping them to make better choices, but not getting sucked in to their drama, whether that's the type of stuff we talked about earlier with social media and politics and all of that, or if it's relationship issues between people that you love. Psychologists call that like the drama triangle. Just stay out of it. Just let people deal with their own issues and stay above the fray. Don't get overly involved in it so that you can kind of keep your conscience clear, but do those little things out of love for them when you can, and then step back when you can't. And really try to see the difficult people that are in your life the way that God sees them. And ask God in prayer to really help me to love this person like you love them. Because I think that especially if you have someone who's in that close circle where the attachments are stronger, help me to love them the way you love them, Lord. And then, we talked about not expecting gratitude of others or honor from others, but you yourself, like, practice appreciation and gratitude. And model that for the kids because gratitude is still really important. And we want our kids to have gratitude. We want the people around us to be joyful, right? And joy comes from gratitude. If we don't have gratitude or thankfulness for what we had, if we're always looking at like these little things that other people have to work on or that we have to work on, and then we don't cultivate gratitude and then we don't cultivate joy. So those are mine.
I can speak from experience on that issue of gratitude because I worked with someone once who just this was who they were, and she was constantly expressing gratitude and then also affirmation for all the other members on the team, and it made all the difference in terms of us work. I mean, I was working as a camp counselor, so you can only imagine how exhausted we were working 18-hour days for the course of the summer. But comparing the summer when she was on staff compared to the one where she wasn't, it was a night and day difference because of just that those little perforations or punctuations of gratitude and affirmation I think they made all the difference. And like you say, it's with, you know, how kids do better when their peers or their siblings correct them. It's the same thing when someone who's on your level is affirming you or expressing gratitude, it means so much more, I think.
Yeah. And when we can do that for others, it just makes everybody more delightful too. So practically speaking.
Yes. And one piece of practical advice that St. Teresa gives is, especially concerning this desire for honor, is to, when we catch ourselves like maybe feeling like we're underappreciated, or that, you know, we deserve better, or when we find that we're looking for that, she recommends kind of volunteering to do a lowly task. You know, do something, or perhaps just something small that you don't really want to do, whether that's some kind of cleaning or, I don't know, something like that. I think just to kind of remind us, like, no, I'm here to serve. I'm not here to receive, but I'm here to give. And so just doing something kind for another person or for your family.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Well, to take us home, Dr. Mary Ruth, do you want to give us a thought for prayer for the week to take to prayer, to take home with us, and to bring to God?
Yeah, I want to really encourage everybody this week to think about and to pray about what relationships or things they or you need to detach from. Or think of it, how do I need to reorient my attachment? Do you maybe have some unhealthy attachments in your life? Are you maybe trying to find your self-worth through the success of others or from the praise of others? Do you put too much value on how much others think of you? I want people to be praying about that. Like, where are the unhealthy relationships in my life that I need to take to prayer?
That's great.
Because ultimately, it doesn't matter what others think. It only matters if we're pleasing God, right? So.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's plenty of people who will be listening or watching this week who find themselves stuck in the drama triangle, which I love that phrase. I'm going to use it. It's not unlike the Bermuda Triangle, so.
Seriously, you get lost in it. Your soul gets sucked out. It's horrible.
So we'll offer our prayer up for everyone watching or listening this week as well. Whatever you're dealing with, wherever you are in your spiritual life, know that we'll be offering your situation and your life up to God as well. And we thank you for listening. We also want to ask and remind all of our viewers and listeners to please send in questions. You can either leave them in the comment box if you're watching this on YouTube, or if you're listening on as a podcast, please go ahead and email us at carmelcast@icspublications.org about what we've covered this week or in previous episodes, or really anything. We'll probably cover the whole gamut of prayer by the time we're done. And we hope to get to as many questions as we can throughout this season. One of the benefits of us kind of recording close to the date of when these will be posted on YouTube is that we're able to answer your questions as we go along. And then also a reminder that next week we'll be covering chapters 16 to 21 of The Way of Perfection. So please join us in reading for next time. And we want to thank you and God bless you.
Hey everyone, Brother Pier Giorgio here. Thanks for checking out this episode of Carmelcast. If you want to hear more of us, don't forget to click subscribe. Also, be sure to click like if you enjoyed this episode, and maybe even leave us a comment. We post discussion questions down below to get the conversation going. Want more information on Carmelite spirituality and the Discalced Carmelite Saints? Then you'll want to check out our website, www.icspublications.org. There's a link in the description of this episode. From here, you can see all our current promotions and access our complete catalog for the writings of St. John of the Cross, St. Teresa of Avila, St. Therese of Lisieux, St. Elizabeth of the Trinity, and St. Edith Stein. If you want to stay up to date on all our promotions and new titles, then be sure to add your email to our email list. There's no better way to stay up to date on the latest Carmelite publications. Thanks for joining us, and may God bless you.